Guitarist Milosz has a new recording out called The Moon and the Forest, and he says it's his personal fairy tale. You'll find out why it's his personal fairy tale, and you'll find out more about how these two concertos came to be. And there's much more about this new recording that you'll learn about this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Macher. Well, Milosz, first of all, where are you? Are you in London? I know that's normally your home.
Yes, London's normally my home, but last week I've been in Brussels, in Belgium. I was playing with the National Orchestra, and because of the current rules and regulations, I had to isolate myself for a week there. But then the reward of being on stage with an actual orchestra and performing with musicians after so many months has been the most incredible, incredible thing. So I'm very happy. And just on the way back to London, I decided to stop in Paris to do a couple of bits and pieces that I had to do here, and then I'll be on my way to London tomorrow.
Wow, so you're kind of easing your way back into a pre-COVID routine, maybe.
Well, I don't think that the pre-COVID routine was healthy for anyone, so I think that we want to learn from that and perhaps not go as extreme and not think that traveling for every little thing to another country is a very good idea anymore. We also have to think of what we are doing to this poor planet, and there are so many issues that have come to light as a result of this pandemic, I feel. But also, what is really encouraging is to see that things are starting to move, that music is slowly returning in a much more organic and natural way. And I'm very excited. This has lasted for a bit too long, and we've lost so many people, and it's been so horrific in so many ways, but I really hope we don't just forget all about it. I think we all have to learn from this.
When you walked into that concert hall for the first time with an audience, what did that feel like for you?
Well, seeing an audience and feeling the energy of an audience is everything to me. And I remember the very first time when I was very young, when I just played in front of people back in Montenegro, and just stepping out on that stage, it felt like I was home. It felt like I don't belong more strongly anywhere else. And later in my career, when things became very serious and where I was often under a lot of pressure to deliver in important moments, and it's not always easy, I always remember that. I always remember that sort of childlike joy that I had and that I never want to lose. I think this pandemic and being away from stage for months on end and sometimes not even touching the instrument for days, and sometimes thinking more seriously about what you are going to cook for dinner than what piece you are practicing, these things all add up and reinforce your love for music and reinforce that incredible feeling that we as musicians have, and the privilege that we can share that feelings with people around us. It's such an extraordinary gift to do something in your life which is not just a job, but something that really allows you to connect with people, no matter what language they speak, no matter what age they are, no matter anything. And how great is that? And it's a for that reason that I believe that whatever happens, live music will always be there because people will seek it and want it.
I'm thinking back to our last conversation when you put out the recording, The Sound of Silence, after your hand injury, and you had had a lot of time to think about what was really important to you during that period and how you might, I guess, sort of reinvent yourself, if you will. Mm. And I'm wondering, did that maybe in some way prepare you for this time with the pandemic? Do you feel like maybe you were better prepared?
When I think of the last 10 years and, you know, since the first album was released and the whirlwind of the first 5 years, And then of that year when I had to take a pause and find myself and my connection to music and what I want to do and how as a result of that hand injury that I had. And then again, everything became very exciting. And then the pandemic hit again. So it's like it's been really like a roller coaster of ups and downs and of incredible experiences and of very low moments. But I, as a person, I'm not scared of facing the darkness. I'm very, you know, we say that people from the Balkans, they have this incredible combination of darkness from the Slavic side and the incredible lightness and joy from the south, from the sort of Mediterranean side. And when those two things clash together, it gives you a personality of extremes. I mean, I'm now massively generalizing, but at least it applies to me. And searching for all those corners of your personality in the time when you are taking yourself out or the world takes you out of what your current state is very important. I don't think that my injury prepared me for the pandemic, because during my injury I was under tremendous pressure to recover. Because while I was licking my wounds, the world still kept going. And now there was no pressure because the world stopped going anywhere. And we just had to find ourselves within that. And while on so many levels that's been incredibly hard, on an artistic level, actually, it has been very powerful. And it has come with great gifts that I think we will see in the future on the concert stages, on theater stages, you know, in art galleries, because in the periods of hardship is when you create the best art. And that's going to give us, I think, a very exciting period after the pandemic.
You were mentioning earlier in this conversation about sort of prioritizing when you're going to get on a plane and travel. What you're going to be doing. How are you going to prioritize that? Have you thought more about that?
Well, I'm a very intuitive person, and very often when I end up doing something because I'm talked into doing it, I realize that, okay, it's maybe a good thing that I did this on a sort of cerebral level, but emotionally, maybe it didn't bring me what I need. And every time you do something that doesn't go with your emotions, I think you are chipping off a little bit of your heart. And then if you keep doing that too much, it means that there won't be very much left. So I think following your instinct with things and with concerts and with travels and with engagements and with and doing them for the reason of music and connection and joy and the repertoire you want to play and the people you want to be with, that's everything. And that's more important than anything else superficial. I just, you know, when you face a prospect, like if you ask any musician, like, what would you be if you weren't a musician? If there is an answer, then there is trouble. Because I think whenever I ask myself what I would be if I weren't a musician, even in those moments when actually my fingers weren't even working, I never had an answer. I never had an answer. I could think of things I would enjoy, but I never had an answer of what I would do. And that's very precious. And this pandemic reminded me of that.
That's interesting that you say that, because when young students are in music school or a conservatory, they are told that so many times. If there's anything else that you can do outside of music, go do that, because you'll, you know, in terms of follow your B plan. And I think a lot of kids find that to be really, I mean, so, you know, it might be right for some, but others are like, wait a minute, you know, this is why I'm here. And that's a hard thing to, it's a hard thing to swallow.
In my opinion, that's not a very good advice. I think it's you have to follow what feels right. And if it feels right, it's right. But the one thing that I always say to young musicians is that what liberates a musician is knowing that there is no one else in this world who can play or sing the way you can. And when you know that, all the pressure disappears. And if you seek for the best version of yourself, then you are on course of doing something really great.
Your latest recording is called The Moon and the Forest, and you say that this recording is your personal fairy tale. It's your personal fairy tale come true. Why is that?
Well, how wouldn't it be with two amazing new guitar concertos on one album and releasing an album where all the music on it is new and specially written and commissioned for you? You know, as a classical guitarist, we are not so spoiled for choice when it comes to repertoire, especially for concerto repertoire for guitar and orchestra. And ever since I started recording, it's been my dream to inspire composers to write guitar pieces, and for those composers to be the names like the Howard Shore and Joby Talbot. It's really a dream come true. These pieces are a fairy tale because they are incredibly imaginative. They are incredibly personal. Both of them allow the listener and me to create incredible variety of images and imagination. And I'm someone who lives with a very vivid imagination. I really... You know, some people say, like, if you are not playing right now, stuff. So, what do you do with your days? Like, I'm never bored. I'm really never bored. I'm always in my mind. I can travel anywhere I want, and I can do anything I want and feel anything I want. And that's just something that I have been given and that has inspired me very much in my artistic journey. So I think that both Howard and Joby felt that, and they've given me these pieces that really have so many beautifully knitted stories to tell. And I hope that everyone listening to them will find their own stories with those pieces as well.
Let's talk about the stories within these pieces. The Joby Talbot is called Ink Dark Moon. Mm. Tell us about that musical journey. What are we hearing?
So I approached Joby when I heard his ballet at the Royal Ballet at Covent Garden. And he did an incredible score for Alice in Wonderland, which was a fantastic choreography of Christopher Wheeldon, and it was on the repertoire of the Royal Ballet for, you know, season after season after season. It's just a magical thing. And I thought that, you know, that who is this composer who in this day and age has written this kind of music? It has elements of sort of Glassian minimalism, and then it has incredible perpetual energy that just relentlessly keeps going. And then so much delicacy. It's tonal, but at the same time, always shifting harmonies and like twisting your emotions in, by doing it. It was so powerful. And I thought, I really want this man to write a guitar concerto for me. And that piece would just be something special. And I really think I wasn't wrong, because we met and we instantly connected as human beings and as musicians. And we talked about the piece and what we want the piece and to be. And he said, I want to write for you so that there is that you have all the time to create this sound, and that the orchestra is like this beautiful resonating soundboard, so that every idea that comes from the guitar resonates in the texture of the orchestra. And by doing this, we are also solving the problem of volume, because so many composers, when they write for guitar and orchestra, they are intimidated by the fact that guitar is such a quiet instrument. And Joby wasn't intimidated by that. He was actually embracing that and using that in the orchestration. And that was very special. The title for the piece came later, because we went back and forth over months and months and even years, and I was challenging him, he was challenging me, and then there was a period when I wasn't able to help him. It was at the time when I wasn't playing, so but through all those very transformative musical processes, everything I was hearing always reminded me somehow of the moon. And I said to him, there are, in the second movement particularly, the way that the open strings evolve and then from sort of lighter textures get into this richness, and then suddenly there is emptiness. It's the same like the phases of the moon and how it transforms and how every day it's different, and how these shades of colors of gray and blue are so intense and so seductive. And after a lot of thought and a lot of ideas, we kept coming back to this idea of the moon, and then he came back and he said, I think I have a title. And it was the title of a collection of Japanese poetry. And he found it. And when he said to me, I felt it was 100% right.
You say that the full power of the orchestration and the guitar writing in the third movement breaks the glass ceiling of possibilities. How does it do that?
Well, I was always annoyed that when guitar concertos you would play a lot, and then, for example, in the Aranjuez, which I love and I've played it so often, in the third movement, it's like after all this running and chasing and scales and arpeggios and everything, you just have to end up on three pianissimo staccato notes. And I just always thought, oh God, I really wish this piece had a grand ending, like Rachmaninoff's Third Piano Concerto, or the Tchaikovsky, or the Brook, or something. You know, I don't have to be a shy guitarist all the time. So I said to him, give me fireworks. Like, I want to break my nails and fingers in the end and like play this like there is no tomorrow. And he also has a bit of a background in rock and roll and that whole more popular side of things, and he came with these passages which are incredibly fast and incredibly loud and very, very difficult to play, because to play very loud and aggressive and very fast is the hardest thing on the guitar. But it was like guitar gives a thing and the orchestra gives a thing. The answer, and like the answers are everywhere. And then in the end, there is this cadenza which just builds and builds and builds and builds and builds. And it builds so far that when it finishes, you just think it can't go any further. And it really just explodes. That's why I say it's like breaking a glass ceiling, because every time I played it live or in the studio, I just felt this is just just the best thing I ever had to learn to play. It's just so much fun.
Wow, that's saying a lot. I'm sure Joby was quite excited to hear that reaction to it. Is he a guitarist? How did he know how to write for the instrument?
Well, I told him, write whatever you want to write, and it's my job to make it work. But just one few pointers. Think like you have one hand on the piano rather than two, and everything you can play with one hand is probably going to be fine on the guitar. And also stay in the keys that have open strings. So keep more to the white keys than the black ones. Because guitar has a lot of limitation in terms of you can't suddenly play in C sharp major. You know, it's very, very tough to do that. Because the resonance of the guitar is something very natural and you have to respect that in order to make it all gel and feel idiomatic. So that was all, and then things kept coming back, and I made them work, and most of the time, both with Howard and with Joby, it really worked, because if you think this way, then it works, and then the composer is sort of liberated to write whatever they feel. There's nothing worse than to traumatize a composer before they even start writing. I think it really is our role to give them open hands and use their creativity to the full.
Howard Shore is Canadian, and he wrote a piece for you called The Forest, and this was a commissioned work by Canada's National Arts Centre. How did it come about?
This was very exciting because I remember there was this one season in 2014-15 when I was playing the Aranjuez Concerto all over the world, and one of the performances was in Munich with the Munich Philharmonic, and a wonderful young conductor, British conductor Alexander Shelley. And after the performance of Rodrigo, we went for dinner to celebrate, and you know, it was a success. And we were talking, oh God, it would be so nice that next time we play, we do something else. And like, what shall we do? And then I said, I really just would love to get some pieces written. And the idea of Howard came because Alex was about to go to become the principal conductor of the NAC Orchestra in Ottawa in Canada, and he said, why don't we ask Howard Shore? I said, Howard Shore is like one of the top three film composers in the world, and why would he do that? He said, well, why not? Would be very exciting, and leave it with me, and we'll see what we can do. So just a couple of weeks later, I remember the phone rang. I was in Dubai, of all places. I was playing a concert in the festival there. And he said, well, Howard is very keen and he wants to meet you and he's your fan. And I was incredibly surprised because I didn't think anything would come out of this. And when I was in New York next time, I played a concert there and Howard was in the audience. And that's when we met and had the most wonderful conversation. And after that, he started writing for me. We ended up having fascinating conversations about music and about what we want this piece to be. We met in London and in New York. We were on the phone a lot. And then after all of that was done and after we changed ideas, he just disappeared. And then a year later, he said, here is your piece. It's ready. And I was so scared. And then when I started discovering the piece and learning my part and adjusting my part and I was hearing all these little echoes and ideas that I shared with him. I shared so many personal stories with him about my childhood back home in Montenegro, my grandmother and her beautiful singing and how much that inspired me. Repertoire of the guitar that I felt inspired by and why I loved being a guitarist in the first place. And then as I was learning his piece, there were all these tiny little pieces of reference which were like little fossils you were finding inside a rock, just appearing. And unless you know they are there, you wouldn't even notice them. But like, very personal and very special. I think he wrote a piece that, you know, Joby's piece is very modern and very of this time, and Howard's is somehow very classic, and it's a concerto where it has this classical elegance, which suits his character so much. He's a real, real gentleman. I absolutely adore him.
Can you give me an example of some of the fossils that you found and where we hear them in this concerto?
Well, there is a very interesting reference to the famous theme from the Aranjuez. And I was in the first rehearsal, was the first time I heard the orchestral part properly. And in the tutti of the second movement, suddenly it comes and there is this interval. And when it came, I literally thought, my God, am I in the wrong concerto? But then, of course, it changes completely. And I asked him afterwards, I said, Howard, why did you do that? And he said, well, I wanted to honor Rodrigo for writing one of the most beautiful pieces ever written, not just for the guitar, but in the whole world. And because of this piece, you are here and I'm here writing another one, because that piece is has given you so much in terms of exposure and possibilities, and it's true. And I think that's such a beautiful way of doing it, to, in a new guitar concerto, actually reference the genius of the other master. And then in the first movement, there is one part. Only if you know this Montenegrin song, you would pick it up, and it's very discreetly and very elegantly done, and it's beautiful.
Your homeland of Montenegro is known for its dark forests. I'm wondering how those forests might have helped to inspire you as you were playing this piece.
So the forest and the name for the concerto came purely from Howard. And the reason is that he writes all his music at home, and he lives in upstate New York, and he's surrounded by forests. And he says that he finds the peace of the forest so incredibly important in his compositional process. And me being from Montenegro, as a very small country, but as a country of absolute extremes, where, you know, mountains become the sea, and where the forests are so intense and so dark and so untouched that they hide so many secrets. And it's a very powerful thing to grow up with, because this respect we have to nature is almost religious. And I still find that fascinating every time I go back. My personal connection has always been more to the forests near the sea, because for me there is nothing more incredible than the combination of the sea air with the smell of the pine forests, and that's something that brings me to my whole childhood and the summers on the coast and the Mediterranean flair. And I was very happy that Howard felt that nature and all those things in the conversations that we shared, even though on two completely different continents, is a sort of unifying geographical factor for both of us. And I think that's one of the reasons why he used it, and that sort of ever-changing. You see, people come and go, and our lives are really short, but nature always stays and always finds its way. And I think we as humans, we always have to remember that we are so small Because if nature wishes to punish us, it can just lift a finger and everything can go back to zero. And it's a sort of power that is fascinating. Just have to respect that.
There's really beautiful interplay with the wind section in this concerto, especially in the final movement. Why do the winds play such an important role in this movement? Do you know?
Yes, there are even castanets and the rhythmical passages there that sort of resemble an Andalusian feel. And then the winds are there also because I think the winds sort of mimic a human voice, and there is nothing more natural than guitar being an instrument that accompanies a human voice. And the guitar with wind instruments always feels very, very close in terms of timbre and sound and layering of color. So his use of the instruments in the orchestra was very imaginative. Never overpowering and always sort of preserving that communication between guitar as a solo instrument and then this communication with the orchestra and the exchange. And I think, as I said, it's very, very elegant. It's very classical in how he conceived it. And I like it for that very much.
Also a solo guitar arrangement of Ludovico Einaudi's piece called Full Moon on this
yes.
recording. It's a new arrangement. How did this arrangement come about?
So Ludovico Einaudi's music is something that I, you know, have at home from time to time on a playlist. It's a different way of listening to his music because he writes so much incredible music and his music is predominantly focused on an atmosphere, and I think it creates an atmosphere of like very rarely anyone can, and I think it is for that reason that he's been so successful and why people connect with it, because, you know, think of a room without music and then the moment you put some music on it just changes. And on one of those occasions, I was listening, and this piece came on, and I thought this is very special. There's something about those simple intervals that sort of created the reaction, and I looked, and it was called Full Moon, and that was very shortly after I premiered the Talbot Concerto, and I thought, wouldn't this be like a beautiful encore? After a concerto to do something like this, and I try to see whether it works, and it really does, and those resonances within the guitar also lend themselves so naturally to his music. I was a bit scared that he won't like it or because he's very particular, such an incredible professional, and I was so happy that when I received a message from him that he really, really likes how it sounds on the guitar and that maybe there is more we can do. So I'm very excited about that.
The recording closes out with a touch of German romanticism. It's a piece from Robert Schumann's Scenes from Childhood. Tell me about the piece and why it was the right way to end this recording.
Träumerei is my nod to tradition and my nod to where my essence lies. And in my career over the last 10 years, I've been very brave at times and very classically guitaristic at times. And I love each and every one of those projects and albums. And, you know, even when I went as far as the Beatles and with The Sound of Silence, and now to do new concertos and new music and this pandemic. And I just was thinking, in the times when there was no pressure of the next concerts, like what was the music that I played for myself when I was in the room practicing? Like, I always reached out to Bach. I always reached out to my Spanish repertoire, to my Villa-Lobos, to the repertoire that I learned my craft and that brings me down to the roots, into the earth. And I think the next 10 years will be more traditional and more conservative, maybe, but there is always a 21st century way of doing it, and I'm excited about finding those ways. But I wanted to end the album with something as iconic as Träumerei, because I've always loved that piece. It's a piece that many recognize and connect with on the deepest possible personal level. And if you are transcribing something, you should only really do it if your transcription adds another layer to that piece and doesn't take away anything. Because if you're simplifying something or taking away something, it means it doesn't work. It means there is no point in doing it. So I was very excited to try it again, to start from scratch and to see whether there is a new way of arranging it. And indeed there was. And I'm very happy to end with that little dream and just look forward to the future. And I think we all have to keep those dreams, and we have to keep believing that the next chapter is there for us, and we have to give it our best shot.
The Moon and the Forest, a new recording that features two brand new guitar concertos written especially for Milos. Thanks to Valerie Kaler, our producer of New Classical Tracks. And since you're clearly a music fan, let me tell you about another podcast you might like. It's the Piano Puzzler Podcast, where every week, host Fred Child invites composer Bruce Adolph into the studio, and they play a brilliant musical mind game. How do they do it? Well, Bruce takes a familiar tune and disguises it in the style of a classical composer, and then a contestant tries to solve the riddle. If you're up for the challenge, subscribe to The Piano Puzzler, wherever you get your podcasts. This is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Almacher.